The implication is that happiness, in itself, is no worthwhile aim in human life. Certainly T.E. Lawrence didn't think so. It was T.E. Lawrence who bowled over the young C.V. James by insisting in print that happiness was a byproduct of absorption. He was saying that if you were absorbed enough in some worthwhile activity, happiness might be the spin-off. A corollary to this fine idea was that there might be no time to enjoy the happiness, because you would be too busy being absorbed. I myself, during a long career separating an idle and misspent adolescence from my present state of incipient disintegration, usually found that I had almost no time to stop and examine what might well have turned out to be a period of happiness, and that, when I did, the happiness soon struck me as so absurdly self-centered that it made me unhappy to think about it. I also found that it might be taken as even more self-centered to voice this conclusion. The people who are sharing the raft on your course through life's rapids, notably your immediate family, are unlikely to burst out cheering if you say you can't be happy for 5 minutes without thinking of all the people who aren't. They might be quick to point out that when you talk that way, the people who aren't include them, and that they might perhaps come first in your thoughts, to the extent, at least, of your trying not to bore them with expressions of your misery just when everybody is settling down to watch The Sopranos. The capacity for happiness works the same way as the capacity for misery, in that it refuses to be relative. If you have made a loved one miserable, it's useless to tell them that many thousands of people are currently dying by violence. In fact, it's another form of violence to say so. Misery can seldom be reasoned away. But happiness, though just as pure a feeling, can often be reasoned away in an instant. Nowadays, I try not to let that happen. Life makes us melancholy, and the melancholy comes from the realization that your moments of happiness are not only fleeting, but meaningless in the context of the sufferings of others. Melancholy will find us. We don't need to seek it, and it's definitely no virtue in itself. We owe it to the next generation to behave as if life were worth living. It is, even when we hear that yet another child has gone missing. It is, even for the child's parents, although to them it might not seem so ever again. But the little children want your smile, or they get scared. We should do what we can, but save our sadness that we can do no more, because eventually disaster will draw close enough. Dealing with it will demand a sense of proportion, which is always a balance between good cheer and realism, and can't be resolved entirely in favor of either term, lest our view of life be either inane on the one hand or heartbroken on the other.